So let me just go over a couple things with you as far as some of the things I'm thinking about in reference to the economy. I just want to recap some of the things that I probably said on the air today. I'm not sure. But let me just say that I don't believe, as we look at the markets today, we see the Dow's down, back down 330 points, so about 1.3% in negative territory. I do believe this is a blip in the radar screen. I think it's going to continue. It could continue for some time, but the fact of the matter is that July 4th, after July 4th, we start earnings seasons again. Earnings is going to, is going to start, and that's going to take everybody's attention away from some of the assumptions and on to the real life, what's going on in the economy. I expect to have good earnings season once again. I can't imagine that we won't. I expect to have a earnings season, frankly, a little bit better than we even had in the first quarter. I said that at the beginning of the first quarter, that second quarter was going to be a good earnings season. I think that you've got to, the Federal Reserve's never right, but you got the Atlanta Fed talking about a 4% GDP growth this year. I don't think that's going to happen, but again, they're not right. But there's a lot of optimism in the market. I am still optimistic about the market. That hasn't changed much. And I don't want it to change as far as you all are thinking as well. There is, I would say this, though, there's more risk in a downturn happening because of geopolitical events than there has ever been. And I think that is a little bit of a cause to be cautious. I think that we are on the verge of potentially seeing something fairly dramatic happen in the Eurozone. That will have a contagion effect and will impact all economies. The Eurozone, I'm talking about the Eurozone now, is the largest economy in the world. When you add the 28 nations in the Eurozone together, that's the largest economy in the world. And obviously, that is something that we need to be concerned about. Asia needs to be concerned about as well. So when we look at the Eurozone, I am concerned about the financial system first and foremost, and then flat out just regular fundamentals of their economy. Sales of products, exports, imports, wages, inflation or lack thereof, negative interest rates, no central bank that is willing to do anything. You got one central bank who really doesn't have a lot of power and authority because you've got in the Euro bloc 17 nations, the ones that are on the Euro dollar, able to make their own decisions through parliamentary procedures. So really, Mario Draghi doesn't have any real power anyway. So, I mean, you've got a lot of difficult things going on in the Eurozone, and I'm concerned about their economy not doing so well. Mexico is only going to get worse. It's not going to be getting any better. If they don't come up with a NAFTA deal, that is going to be a problem. Already huge problems coming to the surface in Canada, and we'll see how that shakes out. But that, if nothing else, Mexico and Canada are going to be more incentivized than ever to get a deal worked out with NAFTA, one would think. The problem really is Canada, not Mexico. Canada is in a situation where they're afraid that anything they do is going to make things worse, and they can't afford that. So that's an issue. We have a lot of unrest in Central America. We have a lot of unrest in South America. The Venezuela crisis is not over by any stretch of the imagination. We've got to be concerned about Brazil's economy. Brazil, a very large economy. I guess you could argue, I would argue that it is somewhat of a democracy of an economy. They're in big trouble. All these things are going to, and here we are, the U.S., like an island out there on its own, seeming to do very, very well. It is not reason to ramp up protectionism. We don't want to be a protectionism society. That never works. Not going to work now. We need to be free markets, free trading, and we need fair trade. I'm not concerned about trade deficits. Somebody asked me that 20 minutes ago. I was on a radio interview. Somebody asked me about trade deficit, what are we doing about it? I said, I really don't care if we do anything about it. Trade deficit is a ledger. It's a entry in the ledger. It's about as all it's worth. If anything, one could call it capital, but it's not anything to be concerned about. And I've never been that concerned about huge trade deficits. And I don't think that's one of the goals of this administration, is to reduce the trade deficit to zero. That's not going to happen. We have we've had trade deficits since the 1970s, early 1970s. And it's going to continue. They're always going to be there. That's just a way of a free market trading system. But we do have some strong headwinds, and I think most of the headwinds are coming out of the Eurozone. And it has been a source of some concern for me anyway, as I do some analytics on the geopolitical events. All right, I won't bore you with any more of that stuff, but I just wanted to give you a kind of an idea of some of the things that I'm looking at around the globe. I think America has never been poised better to be the strongest nation, economic nation in the world. I think we certainly will be and have that potential to be even stronger. The question is, will we be allowed to and be able to? I suspect not. I think that there is a groundswell of Republicans, and it's going to really come out after the November elections against this president. This president has interrupted dramatically their way of life. They are no longer the royal elite of the party. So many of them resigning, they can't bear the thought of this president, who, by the way, knows more about the American people than they have ever known about the American people. And they truly have a disdain and a dislike for honesty, straightforward talk. They just can't deal with it. They don't know how to deal with it. They probably never had to deal with it when they were kids, and they're still kids not wanting to deal with that. And it's a huge problem here for us in America. We have a president that has the strongest poll numbers that he's ever had, getting stronger. I don't know, after this immigration bill and the time the media finishes with it, whether that are still be not bill. Immigration problem will still be, that will still be the case. I think the strongest headwinds that we are facing in the economy in the future are going to be lack of employees. I just don't think there's going to be any people. I think that's going to cause a big problem in the economy. And it is something to be concerned about. Sounds like a trivial thing. It's not a trivial thing, or some would say it sounds like a good problem to have. It's not a good problem to have, and it's not a problem that you want to have, but we continue to ignore it. The second headwind that I'm concerned about is the deficit of the United States of America. So interest rates are going up. We are adding to our trade deficit dramatically when that happens. We still have a Fed that wants to normalize interest rates. I do too. But we need to see a plan, which I don't think we're going to see out of this administration anytime soon, but we need to see a plan of what we're going to do about the deficits. If we don't see that plan of what we are going to do with the deficits, it's going to be harder and harder for Republicans to win, and it's going to be harder and harder for the economy to get straight. I do believe that the growth potential in most stocks out there, certainly a lot of those stocks that are on my list, still have enormous potential to continue to grow further and further. I really believe that. I think that pretty much is a given. But again, these headwinds. And so there's a couple things that I wanted to point out. One is, do we continue to take profits? Yes, we continue to take profits, but I'm going to tweak that a little bit. I want you to take profits, continue to take them probably through the rest of the year, and continue to build up a cash pool. What I want to say here today, I am going to be changing the asset allocation models, and I'm going to be increasing slightly our cash position. I'm going to rob some other areas in order to do that, but I'm going to increase our cash position. I'm going to ask you that if you are one of those asset allocation models that I am increasing the cash position, please try to participate in doing that at all costs. I would say that one way to increase that is to sell out of positions totally. One of the things that may be some opportunities here in the next couple of months is going to be able to sell out of a position that's up strong and buy something totally that's, you know, with all that money that is going to be down or could be down significantly. And that might be a better path forward to start with a beaten up stock and wait that out, continue to add to it, and so on and so forth. I think that's very important that you do that. And I've gotten a lot of questions about it, emails about it, about cash positions and about taking profits. There is a possibility that if the November elections go the way I hope they will go, and conservatives will, if you can call them that, remain, I'll just say Republicans will remain in control of the House of Representatives and the Senate. And we can continue to get things done, like infrastructure, legal immigration system reformed, illegal immigration system reformed, that we continue to get some things done. I believe that there is a possibility, I don't know that it's a likelihood, but a possibility that we could gain we could end up with 60 seats in the Senate. That would be a pickup of 9 seats. That's going to be a very hard thing to do. But there's a possibility that we will certainly pick up a few more seats, and that'll be a good thing. If Democrats lose big, then those Democrats that are left in the House of Representatives and in the Senate are going to be more apt to work with Republicans. They don't want to be the next to go. They're going to try to act and talk more like a fiscal and social conservative. So I'm going to increase cash position so everybody can be aware of that. I think that's important. We're increasing cash position, and I want to have you start thinking about, particularly if you're over 60, to think about selling totally out of a position that you're up significantly on. And I would do that in the next couple of weeks. There's going to be opportunity to reinvest that if you want, or opportunity to pad your income. So I'm going to ask that you will be diligent in doing that. And again, come November, if the elections go the way we hope to, then I will probably be not cutting back the cash position necessarily, but probably say, let's just hang on to what profits we have and not cash out, not take them. There are still some positions out there that have very strong profits. A lot of people, listen, you know, stocks say 52-week highs, and people say it's already a 52-week high. You know that the vast majority of stocks hit new 52-week highs in an up market every year. So it doesn't, you know, if you want to look at a 20-year high or 10-year high, that's one thing. But, you know, we can't get too wrapped up on 52-week highs. The goal is that we own it when it hits the next 52-week high, which obviously is going to be higher than it is when we buy it. So that's what we want to try to look for. You notice that I did not add anything on the buy list. I was waiting for the retaliation measures on from China. I'm still waiting on that. I think the industrial sector is going to have some great buys. Caterpillar, International Paper, Huntsman, that's materials, but Huntsman, John Deere, there may be some opportunities here for buys that we haven't seen in a while, may not see them again for a while in the industrial section. So we want to watch that closely. I'm going to continue to watch that, but there's some great buys out there. I think that I'm going to start I'm trying to, we'll see what happens with China. But again, I'm hoping that China's going to show us their hand with retaliation measures, and then we'll take a look at what I'm going to do for the buy list. I am going to make a conscious effort. I am making a conscious effort collecting my list of stocks that we want to, I don't know if I should say add, but we are analyzing to add. Some have already passed that to add to the list. So again, we're just waiting on a couple of things from the world of global politics. So we'll watch that. I'll just reiterate again, my concern is Europe, so you're going to hear me talking about it. I think we've got to be concerned about that. I think there's a lot of traders that have totally taken their eye off of Europe. I am trying not to fall into that trap and do that. I'm going to try to keep my eye on it for all of you and watch that closely and make decisions based upon that. Oil is another thing that I am going to continue to watch closely. The energy stocks, so that we don't take our eye off of that target. So, again, we've got a lot of concerns out there. I have to admit, though I am still optimistic about the fundamentals of the economy, because, frankly, there's nothing to be pessimistic about on the economy. I'm not talking about the markets now. I'm talking about the economy. There's nothing to be pessimistic about. Things look great. They look as good as they've looked in probably 10 or 12 years. I would suspect they're going to continue to look good. I don't see any reason for them not to. I think that, so our goal is watch the asset allocation models for the cash position. They are going to be changing, and I want you to be conscious and aware of that. I'm not going to add it dramatically, add a lot of cash dramatically, but I am going to add it, and I want you to be aware of it and be careful. I am not looking for you to add into any one of those alternative cash positions. I'd rather see you add to CDs or just leave it in a money market account. It may be temporary. It may be through only the next 5 months or so, through November, we'll say. That's all it's going to be, and we'll get a reading on things then. If the election does not go well, it doesn't look like it's going to go well, I am probably going to be doing asking you to do a lot of selling and increase that cash position significantly. It may be only to wait it out, only to see what is happening as far as what kind of government we're going to be given in November, and what might happen with all that. I can tell you, if Republicans lose the House, markets might take a day or two, but they're going to go down. So that's going to be another buying opportunity for certain, but they're going to go down. So I think it's important that you stay very vigilant on your savings. On your investments gains. And when you see these gains that are getting up there, I think that the end of the day, we don't, the end of the day, in other words, in January 31st, we're not looking for you to have a, 30% portfolio that's up 30%. What I'm looking for you to have is more money than you started with. So if you started with an investment of $50,000, I'm hoping you have 51. Anything over that is what we're looking for. And that's how you're going to have to judge. And don't let anybody else judge your portfolio for you, because they're not going to have any idea of what profits you took. The biggest mistake that people make, and I'm afraid you're going to make it too, but the biggest mistake people make when they take profits is at the end of the year, they look at their statement and say, wow, I haven't done it. I haven't made any money. As quick as you take those profits, you will forget that you ever had them. And The problem is, you will, if you don't remember that you took those profits, you're going to be destined to do something very foolish. So I am warning you, financial advisors don't ever take profit. Why? One of the reasons why they don't want you to do anything foolish and say, I'm leaving this guy. I haven't made any money. I still talk to people on a regular basis, say they're not making any money with their investment advisors. Well, how much do you have? Well, I'm down, well, something's wrong. Have you ever taken, well, I did make two withdrawals. Well, yeah, that's why I don't have any money. Not because it was a bad investment. We forget it very quickly. So, you've got to remember what you're doing here as you take profits. You've got to understand that your money's working for you. And the only way you're going to be able to do that is look at how much money you have and say, all I know is I have more money than I started with, end of story. I don't know whether I'm up 20% or 30% or 40%, but I have more than I started with, and that's my goal. So that's what you're looking to do every year. So we're going to increase cash position on the asset allocation model. Not all of the models will get an increase, but check it out. They're all going to increase. Obviously, if I increase something, I got to decrease something. So look for that as well. I want you to continue to take profits, anything over 9%, like you've been doing. And you may want to consider selling out if you're over 30%, selling out of that position altogether, putting that money somewhere else. Just remember that you did it. And remember, what you put it in is already down dramatically, and it may have a chance to go up. It may not, though. So keep that in mind. The other thing that I want to mention to you is not to get discouraged, to stick to your plan no matter what. And I'm going to try to guide you through it the best way I can. But I would ask you to stick to your plan first and foremost, and don't waver from it whatsoever. It's going to be more critical than ever. And remember, if you have some cash position, that cash position is going to allow you to weather any storm that we have. And the only storm that is going to be long lasting is probably not going to happen until the next presidential elections. So even if Democrats win in November, this November, then the market's probably not going to get impacted because, the market is going to say, okay, now we have Democrats controlling the House of Representatives. That means we have to look and examine to see if a do-nothing Trump administration can last, can enter the next 2 years and be good and strong. That's what you got to worry about it. And I would say, don't take the chance. Don't take the chance. If that happens, then you're going to need to sell some positions. Don't take the chance that the do-nothing economy, because Democrats win in November, is going to be okay with your portfolio. I'm going to want you to build up some cash. So, and we'll talk more about that later down the road as we need to. I've got a couple changes coming to the website. I'll tell you about. We'll take a few questions, but I've got a couple changes, and I'd rather have questions on the economy and general questions that are edifying to everybody when we start taking those questions. So, I would just say that we've got a couple changes coming up to the website. Some of those changes are we're going to be numbering all of our stocks. Every stock's going to have a unique number that you'll be able to refer to. When you call in, I'll be able to refer to as when I call in. I would ask you once again, it happened this morning, not on the air, but this morning I had to talk to somebody by way of email that had two stocks that were down dramatically. One stock was okay. The one stock that was good was the one he took off the buy list. The other two we took off the broad list. And, I'm sorry, no, they weren't mine at all. They were not mine at all. One was a mutual fund from, I forget where, Invesco, I think. And they were down considerably. So I would ask that you don't do that. You don't ask me questions about it if you do it, because I'm not going to be able to give you a whole lot of help. But you stick to the buy list and you stick to a discipline. So make sure that that you do that. You're paying attention. You're watching closely. But what I wanted to tell you was, I had somebody else that had four stocks that they had heard me talk about from time to time. And three of them were in big trouble. And, you know, I said, I don't know where you got those, but I never mentioned them. They've never been on my list. That, you know, I've never mentioned them. And listen, it's critically important that when you call in to talk about a stock, that you don't give out the name, because once you give the name out, it messes me up. Because once the name's out there, I've got to be very careful of what I say. So I'm probably, you're probably wasting your phone call, because I'm probably talking to you in very general terms and afraid to get too specific for fear that somebody's going to hear it and take it wrong. I shouldn't worry about that, but I do. So, you know, try not to do that. And for the sake of your partnership, try not to do that as well. And everybody that I know that I've talked to years later that has tried to be a partner without paying the money to be a partner has gotten hurt. I'm not saying that because it's a testimony to what we're doing. I'm just saying that is, listen, you know, I try to tell everybody, if you can't afford $85 a year, then you shouldn't be investing at all, period. You shouldn't be investing. You know, obviously you're not at that point yet. So you've got to be careful of that. So please try to keep what we do. I don't want you to keep it a secret. I want you to sing it from the tallest mountains of the work that Financial Issues is doing and what we're trying to do for you, for God's people every single day. We want God's kingdom to prosper. We want God's kingdom to continue to grow. And we know that you have the answers. I know that you have the answers to all of that. And that is through your money. You continue to give to some of this great kingdom work. I know that. I understand it. I get it. I want it to prosper. But so I want you to shout what we're doing. That is for sure. But at the same time, you know, we can continue to call and encourage people that are listening. Every time you call and say, well, I love this or I like that, and I'm glad you're doing this, and I'm so glad I'm a partner. That helps the ministry. That helps the ministry, because somebody's hearing that and you know, taking heed, and maybe you're encouraging them to partner with the ministry. So that's good. Ultimately, I want their encouragement to be a nudging from the Lord, as it was you, and that's obviously the ultimate goal. So that's where we want to go. A few questions, and we'll do that. We'll take a few questions. Try to keep them somewhat general, and ask me some questions about the economy or what I think you know might be in store, and things that are edifying for a number of people. Yes, and if you could tell me your name, that'd be great.
Hi, Dan. This is James from St. Louis.
Hey, James.
Dan, just a quick question. Thanks again for your guidance on profit taking as well as selling out of positions entirely. But I do have one question, and it's regarding Vectren. You know, it was acquired by CenterPoint. Should we just continue to sit tight on
yes.
that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. Great. Yeah. Thanks so much. That's all I
You're
need.
Welcome. Thanks, James. I sure appreciate it. Yes.
Hey, Dan. My name is Nick. My question with respect to the energy sector. And maybe a day or a week late on this one. But, you know, I know natural gas has been getting just walloped, which for me gets me really excited. but I'm curious as to your opinion on, you know, I haven't been taking profits. I'm in the younger, very younger age category, so I've been kind of bullish on investing and not so much on taking profits, but I'm considering taking some and trying to funnel some of my energy sector funds into specifically natural gas energy stocks. And I kind of wanted to get your opinion on that. For me, it just seems like a ripe time to buy, and it's, I mean, and if I could, I'd transition everything I own to run on natural gas. Unfortunately, that's not realistic at this point in my life.
Right, right. Well, I would say this to you. As long as you have time, I don't know how many of you listening have LNG. I was going to mention this on the air this morning. I forgot. But LNG is a stock that was on my buy list an awful lot, maybe 2 years ago. And I know a lot of people own it. And, of course, I've had a lot of calls when people say, oh, my gosh, what's going on with LNG? And we're losing our shirt and so on and so forth. You know, and, you know, look at it now. It's another one of those stocks where I use as an example as being a long-term investor. Not that 2 years is long-term, but the turnaround in it is unbelievable. And I kept saying the turnaround was coming. And I think that the turnaround is going to come with NatGas as well. As long as we can keep some pressure and see some pressure on exporting natural gas. Unfortunately, and that's what's happening with LNG, we're starting to see more and more exporting of nat gas, and that has been huge for LNG. Listen, the problem, Nick, I don't have a problem with owning nat gas. The problem with it, I do think it'll come back. I mean, we're still down. We're still at unbelievable lows over the last 6 years. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, we have an abundant supply of natural gas. It's not for any other reason but that. I know there's a lot of analytics about it. There's a lot of, but there's not, it's not for any other reason. We have so much natural gas. And if we don't begin to gain market share in other areas, I don't see the glut going away. Now, in the next couple of years, as we now have an administration that's all about building the infrastructure for the transportation of natural gas and moving natural gas, I think that is going to dramatically help natural gas stocks and prices. But yeah, I probably don't have to tell you that infrastructure takes time, and it's to get in. Now, I live in the state of Pennsylvania where we have a lot of fracking and a lot of natural gas going on, and you know, it's now, this has been since 1997, thereabouts, 1996 when it really started to get big. And it's just now that we're starting to get the infrastructure in place to start moving it. So there are wells everywhere. I mean, they're drilling everywhere, but couldn't get it. They didn't want to produce. They wanted to get ready to produce, but we had no infrastructure. And now that's starting to happen. But the downside is now they're not making any money because prices are so low. And I think those prices are going to stay low. So I like natural gas. I had one until yesterday on my buy list, one of the bigger nat gas companies that I like. But I think that it's going to be slow. I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. I think LNG coming on, LNG shot through the roof yesterday this morning because they announced a buy. They're merging with LNG Partners, the other kind of side of it, so they merged together, which I'm glad they did. So, but we've got to get busy on the exporting, and it's almost a little like coal. You know, they just got to get busy on the exporting and get that infrastructure done from well point to well point and supply demand to demand. So that's happening. I'm all for it. I think it's okay. I think if you're a young man, which you are, and you want to invest, I am not a fan of putting all my eggs in any one basket, even a basket that I love. But nonetheless, I do think that that is going to be a strong area for the economy for the economy. All right, Nick?
Yeah.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you. Yes.
Hi, Dan. This is Doug from Iowa.
Hi, Doug.
You were just talking about selling, you know, or, you know, taking profits and things. I'm 49. Should we still be doing that for our foundational stocks like CAT and International Paper and things like that?
No.
Okay.
No. As a matter of fact, what I'm looking to do in the next couple of weeks is to be adding to CAT, adding to International Paper, adding to John Deere. You know, we're going to, they're the stocks, adding to Huntsman potentially. You know, they're one of those take advantage of this dip. I'm loving what's happening right now in the market. I just hope, I would like it to continue for at least, you know, a week or two. I don't know that it will, but a week or two so that we can have some opportunity to position in it. But yeah, no, I would not. I'm glad you asked that question, Doug, because the foundational stocks I would leave alone, not even look at. Probably wouldn't be taking profits right now. I'd be leaving alone. There has been some profits to take. I know some have taken them. There's going to be more, but I'd be looking very closely at adding to those positions in the next week or two.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Hey, Dan.
Hey.
This is Rich down in Texas. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
It's good to hear your voice, brother.
Thank you.
Listen, I opened up an account for my daughter using your strategy. I have an account with you also. But her account, she gave me $10,000. I bought 12 stocks, leaving $1,000 in cash. Four of the stocks are up. The other eight are down. Now, we've only been in here. By the way, this is long term. She's got 12, 14, 15 years to go. The only one I would consider selling for cash would be MU. It's up 11%. But like we already have 10% in cash. Shall I try and get a little more cash?
Well, I wouldn't. Not for her. She's young. Oh. And I definitely wouldn't sell MU. I say that.
Okay. That's exactly what I was thinking. I just wanted to hear you say that.
Yes.
It's long term. They're all your holding stocks, and I'm not concerned about the account at all.
Good. Good. Yeah, no, I wouldn't touch them. I wouldn't do anything. I may use that 10% up, a lot of that in the next couple of weeks if you see some dips in some of the bigger names.
Okay.
And try to buy a little bit more. Maybe just pick one. Maybe you pick two. But I would try to buy some on the dip, and then maybe look towards taking a little profit just to replenish your cash.
Okay. Great. Awesome. God bless you, and thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Rich. Yes.
Hello, Dan. This is Augie. How are you doing?
Good, Augie. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Two questions. One, I'm a little bit reluctant to ask because I know the answer isn't going to be appropriate for a lot of the listeners, but I'm in the 45 to 55 allocation model, aggressive for my particular age. But I am overweighted in preferred and utilities just to kind of hedge my bets. Now, is it safe to say that if I increase my cash position, that I can somewhat include that in my cash position just because it's sitting away just making me some money?
No, I wouldn't want to use that as cash, you know, in your cash position. But I would say this, Augie. I mean, I think that you're going to increase your cash position by way of dividends, you know, anyway, over time. So you're constantly getting yields that are going to that cash, I assume, right?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Yeah, so you're going to see that increased a little bit. I don't, you know, there may be a... You don't need the income, I guess, do you? You're not looking for the income.
No, sir. I'm still 8 years out.
Okay. Yeah. So I wouldn't. I don't think I'd make too many changes. I don't want you to you know, you might have something that you feel is a little bit of a dog, maybe low, and you want to.
That's my second question. I want to get rid of Caesarstone.
You want okay? Well, there you go. So, if you take something like that, and put, you know, half of it in your cash, and half of it into one of the stocks that one of the big names that may be down here in the next, well, maybe today or the next couple of weeks, that may make good sense.
Okay, brother. Well, I sure appreciate you and appreciate what you do.
Augie, I appreciate you. Your support has been amazing to the ministry, and we just appreciate you guys so much. So thank you for that. And you've really blessed us.
It comes back a hundredfold, I guarantee you.
Well, thank you, brother. I appreciate it. What a blessing. All right, let me go to who's up now. Go ahead.
Dan?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, great. I'm glad to have this opportunity to speak to you, and, of course, God bless you for everything you do.
Thank you.
My question basically is in reference to oil and the geopolitical events that may or may not occur during the next 5 to 6 months, what would be the impact on the oil stocks that, of course, that you either have recommended or part of our portfolio? Would you expect a significant major downturn compared to other, let's say, the industrials or, other areas of our portfolio?
Well, no, I would say that it could have an opposite effect on the oil stock. So the oil stock, it depends, you know, I mean, there's a lot of different energy. So theoretically, by the way, this didn't happen last time, but theoretically, your refinery stocks could go down. Your oil stocks, pure oil stocks, could go up. Your nat gas stocks, it really depends. They could move down. And your service sector stocks could move down. So it depends on what sector. But I think for the most part, if we start seeing some geopolitical events impacting oil, that the large cap, for instance, Apache Energy was up today, probably. I don't know if it still is, but it was up today, even in the you know, middle of all the stuff that was going on and still going on. And, you know, it was the only one. Everything else was down. Apache was up. So all these oil, not all the oil stocks, but all the energy stocks, depending on what discipline of energy they're in, are going to react a little bit differently. So I wouldn't worry about it either way. I wouldn't be concerned about it, and I wouldn't let my concern about what might happen impact what you might do. I wouldn't even worry about it. If you're in it for, you know, a number of years, it's all gonna turn out fine.
Thank you, Dan. I appreciate the help. God bless.
You're
Take
welcome.
Care of yourself.
Thank you.
Dan?
Yes.
Oh, hi. This is Elvin in Montana. I've noticed something with Great Plains. Were they bought out by somebody or merged with somebody, and shall we still keep that stock?
Yes. Keep it. Don't change anything with it. That's one that
okay,
you want to
keep.
And yes, there was a merger, but you want to keep that. That stock's only gotten better. And so the only real downside to the merger was you know, they've cut their dividend. I mean, it's still paying, I don't know what, but 4.5% or so. But it, you know, obviously it was a lot higher than that. But the stock that they, the company that they merged with, was not known for its dividend, you know, payouts, and kind of assumed it would go down. But I'm glad it went down. It needed to. It's still very, very well valued. Good company. Don't change anything.
Well, I appreciate it so much because I wondered about it. Okay. Thank you for what you do.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Okay.
Dan, hello. This is Marie from Texas. My question is about selling positions or taking profit. Does this include also the Timothy mutual funds?
No, I'm glad you asked. So the Timothy mutual funds, you want to keep in there. The only way I would take profit in those is selling out totally and moving on to something else. But I wouldn't want you to take those profits. One of the reasons is a lot of those funds will pay you those profits anyway, whether you like it or not, by way of more shares, and you're going to get a 1099 on that. But I like the idea of accumulating shares there and continuing to let it ride. And by the way, I would say that for any mutual fund.
Okay, great. Thank you for your answer. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you, Marie. Yes.
Hi, Dan. This is Jim in Ohio.
Hi, Jim.
I've only been a member a couple months, and I've only had money in for this in June. So most of the money is in income. Some of it's long-term, but most of it's just for income. So in regards to what you said earlier in the call, is income position excluded from that?
Yeah, so you don't need to do anything with income. You're taking the income off it. You don't take profits off it. Somebody called me about it today, as a matter of fact, on the air. So, yeah, your income is being paid by how many shares you have. And you don't want to give up those, you know, those shares. So you've got to make sure that you keep as many shares as you can. It defeats the purpose if you sell the profit. If you have profit in a particular company and you sell that, then you're selling shares and you're going to be giving up dividend by giving up income by doing that. So you just sit tight with that income portfolio. Okay?
Okay. Appreciate that.
No problem. Thank you. Thank you, Jim.
Bye.
Yes.
Hi, Dan. I'm Pam from Alabama, and I'm a longtime partner. Well, relatively long, 2012, I think, but I have had some of the larger stocks, the Deere, the IP, Caterpillar. I'm still working. I'm 59 years old. I have very little flexibility in my work, so watching the market can be difficult for me. So I'm wondering about in the next few weeks, as you're saying, we may have buying opportunities. I'm wondering about how to make a decision on a limit market or a limit order to purchase these stocks. How would I come up with a price to buy these stocks just by placing a limit?
So if you went in and placed that limit today on the three stocks that you mentioned, I think you mentioned three, right? Caterpillar, Deere, and IP?
IP, correct.
Yeah. So if you were to place a limit order on that today, I would just look at where they are today or you know, where they are right now, or whenever you go in to place that limit order. And I would look at putting it in somewhere. Now, it depends on our, you know, how far below they are what you bought it at. So, if it's, you know, so if it's considerably lower by 20 or 30% lower than where you bought it at, then I would just put in an order, just maybe a few cents below where it is at the time that you put the order in. So if I were to go in, let's say I bought Caterpillar on last week sometime. I bought Caterpillar. And sometime last week it was running about 157 a share somewhere in that neighborhood. And I'm decided, and then now I see that it's dropped and I want to put a limit order in on it. It's sitting, I'm making this number up, but it's sitting at 145 now, which could be by the end of today. I would probably put a limit order in at, you know, 150, 152, and see if it's going to drop lower, you know, or 142, I meant. If it's at 140, what did I say you paid? I don't remember. 157. And so now it's at 142. I would put a limit order in about 140, 141. Because either way, you're getting you're buying considerably below where you bought it at. And that's what you want to look at. You know, the goal is not to try to find the bottom. The goal is trying to make some money on the way back up again quicker on your whole portfolio. So your goal is to lower your average share price. So I would just look at it at night, you know, when you get a chance, look at these things and see where they are and just either go right about where they are, just a little bit lower, if they're considerably lower than what you purchased it for. If they're not, I wouldn't accumulate anymore.
Okay, because my deer is up considerably. I've bought IP and deer at very low prices, so I'm up considerably in those two.
Yeah, so what I might want to do in those two is put in a sell order for a limit so that you have a stop loss. So if it gets, let's say you're up 100%. You might want to, you see it going down. If that thing gets to 75% or 25% down from where you are, you might want to institute a sell order, and you know you got out and you made 75% on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that would be the better thing to do on those.
Okay. Okay, I have another question. I have MRO and KMI. MRO is some of it I'm up a little bit on, but some of it I'm down on some accounts. And KMI I'm down considerably. Should I sit still with those or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I wouldn't change anything with those.
Okay,
KMI's had a really good week. This week brought them out of the last 5 days have brought them out of the red. So they're moving in the right direction. They're even up today. So yeah, I wouldn't change. I would hold on to them.
Okay, and one more last question. This is not one of your stocks. It came into play before I became a partner with you, but it's IAG. And the investor that I was with didn't really do what I had asked to do, and I'm down 50%. So should I just lose that and move out of it or just hold on?
Yeah, so that's a company that's getting impacted by the tariffs. And I, you know, it's just, you know, it's probably going to go up from here. I'm really, you know, going out here. I mean, if we can come up with a NAFTA deal, it's a Canadian company, and it's going to get hit by tariffs if they don't come up with a deal. If they don't come up with a deal, a NAFTA deal, and it does get hit with tariffs, then you're going to wish you'd have sold it. But if they do, it's probably going to have room to run up. So it's really a tough one. I mean, it's not a stock I track real close, but I would be it's one of those really difficult stocks. I mean, it is biblically responsible, I think. I'm pretty sure it is. But I would, if you're down 50%, do you have a lot of it?
Well, I bought it on options, and I have like $11,000 in it.
Yeah.
So I got, you know, $100 for each 100 shares, if I'm not mistaken, way back when. But, you know, and I don't need the money, but so I'm willing to hold on to it, and I've been holding on to it at this low price for a while.
Yeah, it's got, I'm just now looking at it. So, you know, I mean, it's got good, strong financials. I think it's financially sound. But, you know, no matter how we look at it, it's going to be about the tariffs. I would tell you to keep it. I would tell you to keep it and just, you know, see what happens. It's always scary when you see a stock that, you know, it's a small cap stock, and it's a $6 share company. So it's always a little scary when that happens because they don't have a lot of room to work with on the downside. And so let me just look at one other thing. Why we're on this. So it looks like about 30% of companies, these are big investment firms, institutional firms, it looks like about 30% have sold out. They still are being held by about 65%. So that's generally not a good sign. You know, it means that the majority, you know, there's a lot out there that don't have any confidence that it's going to recover very, very much. Let me just look at one other thing. So where did you buy it? Did you buy it around $7?
No, it was like $11.
Oh, that's right. You did tell me.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't want to buy it, but the broker just kind of jumped the gun. And
how much was it when you bought it? How much did you buy it?
I think it was like $11. It was like its all-time high in the last, you know, several years, 10, 12 years or something.
Have you owned it more than 10 years?
Let me think. No, I think I probably got it in 2013,
yeah.
12 or 13.
Yeah, I'm looking at a five-year high of $7.25. So must have bought it before that. Yeah, I would, you know, it's a tough one. I'm looking at this data now, some more data. Maybe you ought to just cut your losses, be done with it.
But, you know, we don't have anything. I mean, right now we're not wanting to invest too much, you're thinking, but maybe I should maybe sell half of it.
Maybe sell half of it and put it into something that you already own that drops down. You know, that would make more sense.
Okay. Dan, thank you so much. I pray for you. I try to contribute when I can, and, you know, I really appreciate all that you do.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate your prayers too. We need them. I desperately need them, and I thank you for it so much. So I appreciate it. It reminds me, folks, I can't speak, I'll just speak for this, the last 2 weeks, but I never talk, and my wife gives me a hard time about this, but, I don't get on the air and share all the things that we're being attacked by, and how we're being attacked. She always says, you should, because all these people want to pray for you and you should share it with them. And the reason I don't is because I don't want to ever be perceived, because it's over the years, it's always been, a bit of a concern of mine for ministries. And I don't want to ever be perceived as trying to raise money, we've got to become stronger and we got to do this and we need your prayers and we're being attacked. And, I've never felt good about that. If I could figure out a way to do that without a lot of people getting that perception, I probably would. But I'll just say that we are attacked on a very regular basis. The last couple of weeks has been a little bit more at a frenzy place. I think some of that has to do with the Southern Baptist Convention and Guidestone and all those kinds of things. And nonetheless, I sure appreciate your prayers, and that's really what I want to say. I thank you so much. It means so much, and it's so desperately needed. So any prayers, we need support like every ministry, of course, but I need your prayers more. Keep praying for the ministry. God keeps raising things up for this ministry to do. I said this morning, we started yesterday on Orlando, which is a very, very big market. And, that's a new market for us. And that came out of nowhere, literally. God raised that up, and we're so grateful for that. He keeps expanding our borders, our territory, and I hope it's because we're in his obedience. We appreciate your prayer. So continue to pray. Thank you so much for that, Pam. I sure appreciate it. All right, let's see. Oops. Do we have
Hello,
somebody?
Dan.
Hello.
This is Bonnie from Ohio, and oh, I was unclear when you said, talked about foundational stocks. I'm not for sure what those are, that maybe we wouldn't be taking profits on foundational stocks, maybe just holding on to them.
Yeah, so the reason why I call them foundational stocks is they're the company that you leave in there and you don't ever look at. In other words, they're the company that is going to hold up, hopefully, over the years, is going to hold up some of your other stocks that maybe aren't doing so well. These are the stocks. The last caller, Pam, just mentioned three foundational stocks. They might not be noted as such on the website, but John Deere, International Paper, and Caterpillar. And they're kind of stocks that are the steady plug along. They're never going to go through the roof. They're never going to be, up 30%. They're not going to be those kinds of stocks, but they're always just going to plug along year after year. I'm not saying they're always going to make money every year, but when you look at 5 and 10-year, 20-year periods, they're always going to be good, solid companies. And it's great in lieu of taking those profits. It's just to let it ride. These are companies that a lot of these companies are companies that are noted to have a split. Caterpillar is one that comes to mind. I would suspect by the end of the year, Caterpillar is going to be announcing a split unless they have a dramatic downturn. So these are companies you just want to hold. You want to live through those bad times and good times, the splits, and all of those kinds of things. So it's just not something that you want to trade hardly at all, if you can help it.
Okay. And then I don't worry about taking profits either.
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
So is something like Marathon Oil a foundation stock?
I wouldn't consider Marathon a foundational stock. I used to consider ExxonMobil one. I would possibly consider ConocoPhillips one or some of the others. I wouldn't consider Marathon one, maybe someday, but I wouldn't consider them that now.
So would they? Would the 8 for 18 be considered foundational, but not necessarily, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, they would be, but not necessarily, not all of them.
Okay.
But
okay.
They usually, you know, they certainly could be stocks you don't want to mess with.
So some of the characteristics, I imagine all the foundationals would be like a large cap?
Yeah, most of them. I would say 90% of them. There's some that are mid-cap that would fall in there. So, for instance, a technology stock like Micron, you know, or AMD or something. For them to be a large cap, it takes a lot. So the technology stocks are a little bit different, you know. So they're likely to be, you know, mid-caps. And even some of the oil companies, for that matter, could be.
Okay, because I'm trying to get a handle on this. So would it be probably recognizable names?
Yes. Yes, it would be. Yep.
Okay.
And all in those sectors, I would say the vast majority, almost all of them, are going to be names that you would recognize. I'll give you some non-biblical ones that come to the top of my head. Procter & Gamble, Kellogg's, Johnson & Johnson, you know, they would all be names you'd recognize that would be foundational stocks. Unfortunately, they're not biblically responsible. They were at one time. But they would be kinds of names like that. DuPont, which is on the list, International Paper, Caterpillar, John Deere, you know, those companies, yeah.
Okay, so then just one other question. So AMD...
Sure. Yes.
So, because I'm just looking at that right now, and I'm up. I'm taking my profits on time, but this one's up 26%, and I haven't taken a profit.
Yeah.
So, and this, I'm just guessing that's not a foundational one.
No, it isn't. But it is. It's a $16 billion company, and it is close to being a foundational stock, could very well be, but they don't pay any dividend whatsoever, and they probably never will. The other thing about this is this is a stock that is going to tend to be a lot more volatile, have bigger swings than some of the foundational stocks. This is a stock, if you look at it just this year, it was down considerably. You know, it was $9 a share back in April, and now it's $17 a share. It could go down to 9 again in a minute. If you look at it back in 2015, it was $1.61 a share. So it is a stock that is going to be too volatile. And I don't mean volatile. Ups and downs are fine. I don't mind volatility. But it's the range between
right.
the lows and the highs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so that would be one that if I wanted to go ahead and take a profit on.
Yes.
Just let it grow.
Yeah, I mean that. At the same time, that's one. If you took the profits on, chances are it's going to end up right back where it was when you took the profits, you know, and you're going to have that much money again. The risk in a stock like this, because it's so volatile, and it's volatile on the upside too, remember, that, you know, I would give it some time. I would want to own this for a few years of living through some volatility to take some of the profits before I take some of the profits.
Okay.
Now,
I have it just brand new.
Yeah. Yeah, I probably would just hang on to it and forget about it. I mean, it's at a 52-week high right now. Could it go higher based on what is happening in technologies? I would say it could. The only problem with this stock compared to Micron, they're not strong financially. They don't have the financial wherewithal and financial backing monies in the bank, so to speak, that a Micron does. And, you know, I mean, it's a lot smaller company than Micron, but nonetheless, that could hold them back a little bit. But I would hang on to it.
All right. So then Cyber, S-Y-B-R, I mean, C-Y-B-R, CyberArk,
yeah.
Software.
Yes.
So, okay. I'm sorry. I'm just going to end up a little bit confused here. So because I've been taking profits, but on the other hand, I'm a new investor. I'm coming up on 1 year next month. So take profits or just hold on to them if I'm new?
Well, I would hold on to that one. I mean, I'll say that. I wouldn't take any profits on that. I think that's a stock that's probably going to end up on my buy list in the next week or so.
Okay.
I'm just waiting for some information to come from a friend in Israel over that. I'm trying to find out. They're an Israeli company, so there's certain information that I can't get as quickly as I like to. But yeah, I mean, that's one that I would hang on to. I wouldn't sell anything.
Okay. All right, then. Thank you
okay.
so much for your help.
All right,
help. Fine. Yes.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for your partnership. Yes.
Yeah, this is Dan Smith from Kentucky. I'm 56 years old, and I'd first just like to say that I'm praying for you, and I'm also praying for our president, which I feel is kind of going Goliath, David and Goliath, because the Democrats and other people have really come down on him, and I see what he's trying to do with trade. He's trying to bring people to the table, and the only way we can do that is if it's beneficial for them to come to the table. And with the lopsided trade agreements that we've had from other nations, I feel like he needs a lot of prayer because he's trying to do the right thing. He's trying to get them to understand that we need fair trade, not necessarily dominant trade, but we need to be dominantly over top of other people, but we need to be on the same plane. So I'm praying hard that President Trump will find support in Congress and the Senate, and that some of our senators need to call him and we need to speak to the president and what he's going to do. And I have a
I couldn't agree with you more, Dan. We do. We need to be praying for all of that desperately because he's going to need the prayer. That's for sure. Yeah.
The other question I have, and a gentleman already asked a question about natural gas, but I've been studying natural gas for a while. Is have you heard much on the way of gas liquefaction plants? I've heard that there's 5 in construction, and we
yes.
have. Thinking that the future for gas in this country, because there's such a large amount of gas, is export. And the
yeah.
only way to export it is to liquefy it. And yet we had one liquefaction plant in operation, and now we've got under construction. So somebody out there is putting a lot of money into getting ready to export gas. And this past winter, we had almost issued a state of emergency because their gas was low, and then they retracted it real quick. But I can support Canada with the pipeline. So the pipeline.
Well, I think natural gas is, that's what I said to the other caller. I said, you know, natural gas is going through a little bit of a change in that they've got to start exporting. This is going to be, they've got to get market share and export. And that's when I mentioned LNG, which is a company that I had on my list for a couple of years, many years ago. And I know a lot of people bought it because it was so cheap. And, you know, they're the ones that did the liquefied natural gas site in Louisiana. That's just about online now. And so you know, that's going to be the future of natural gas. So if you got a long-term horizon on natural gas, we stand in a place where we could be one of the largest natural gas exporters in the nation, and I think we that could easily happen.
And not only that, but the natural gas has been billed as a much cleaner fuel, so we've converted a lot of our electrical generation over to natural gas. So natural gas, where it used to really not be drawn on very much in the summertime, is starting to get drawn on even in the summer because of all of our cooling needs are provided by natural gas. And so I'm kind of very encouraged. I've got, I think ETP is on your list. I've got that stock, and I really see a future for it because right now we're screaming for pipelines. Some of the things that the president's trying to do is kind of make it easier for these to get permits and keep permits. And that's I support him very much in the way that he's doing it. I mean, we don't want to sacrifice our environment for the sake of, but there's a limit to how much we should be cautious and these permits go through so that we can get the infrastructure we need.
Yeah.
To get.
Well, that's happening, and that's the other thing I mentioned to the caller too about the infrastructure. So they're all things that I've been watching, and we're going to continue to watch closely. We've got huge natural gas resources, but we need infrastructure. And so we're working on that. We've done a great job here in Pennsylvania getting that infrastructure in. So hopefully we can continue to go in that direction. Dan, you're really breaking up on me, so I'm getting a lot of noise and static. So I'm gonna move on here. But thank you for your call. I sure appreciate it. Yes.
Dan, this is Sarah in Virginia, and
hi, Sarah.
I, too, am trying to take some profits, but I want to keep my foundational. But on your website, the foundational stocks are in yellow, or is that not all of them?
No, that's not all of them, but there are some in yellow already.
Okay, I'll avoid them. Then with the technology stocks or IT, like I have some Checkpoint and Paychex. I'm up in those. Just keep them, or I know they're not in yellow on your website, but
yeah, I mean it's that I always tell people it's never ever going to hurt anybody by taking profits.
Yeah.
You can always take profits. Never going to hurt. So just I would say use your discretion. If you have money invested that you think in 3 or 4 years you're going to need, or you want to start building up a cash position to need, then yes, I would take the profits. But I like those companies that you mentioned, and they all have upside potential, in my opinion, over the next few years. So
yeah, I probably won't need it, and I am 60, but I don't anticipate working for 10 more. I do like what you're talking about, like in the end of the year that I have more cash, or I have more money. Maybe it goes up and down, but like you said, I do like to see it grow. So I'm just trying to balance my personality with companies I love. Like I love Lowe's, that's up. I love LYB, but I could like Huntsman. I could buy back into that.
Right.
Don't let
that influence you too much. The vast majority of stocks that I own, I don't like them hardly at all. So the worst thing you can ever do as an investor is get emotionally attached to stocks.
Okay.
And years ago, my two favorite stocks were Caterpillar and Harley Davidson. I'm going back a while, but and I remember not being able to put them in anybody's portfolio that I was managing at the time because I loved the company. I just loved the companies, loved what they did, I loved how they were managed, loved everything about them. And it killed me, not to know, but I stayed true to my discipline, and thankfully I did. Harley Davidson almost went bankrupt. Caterpillar took a huge turn down. So, look, just always don't try to line it up with your personality, or you may end up bankrupt. And selling
it is not a good thing.
Do what's right for you, but don't do necessarily with things. I love Lowe's. I don't even own any of it. Now, because I never bought it when it was on my buy list, even because I didn't need anything in that sector. But, you know, it's just you got to be just I just caution you on that. That's all. It's dangerous.
Right.
It can be dangerous. You know,
yes,
you know what? And the same thing is, you don't know how many people I have talked to that have missed out on huge opportunities to make a lot of money in selling a stock because they love the stock so much they couldn't bring themselves to selling it. Or it's been so good to them.
Yes.
Or they inherited it from their father.
Yes.
You know, and you know, they end up. So you kind of have to try to take that out of your emotions out of it. It's hard, though. It's hard sometimes.
Yeah. But thank you. I need to remember that. It's
never wrong
to take profit.
Yeah.
There'll be another opportunity. Either that.
Absolutely.
That
that's
company.
Right. That's
okay.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Thank you, Dan.
All right, Sarah. Thank you.
Hello, Dan.
Yes.
Hi, this is Tom from Louisiana.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. I have a comment, and then I had two quick questions, but based on something that you just said a few minutes ago, I probably have a third one. But my comment is this. I'm in my late 70s. I got involved in the stock market about 8 years ago. And about 4 years ago, I became a partner with you, and I have to tell you, I have done very well since that time. So I want to thank you for that.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for saying it.
The one question about Caterpillar, I had understood that at one time they were not biblically responsible. Is that
incorrect,
or has something changed with this?
No. I don't know how long you've been a partner. I forget what you said there. But so last year, I sent out an email to everybody explaining that they had been put back on my list.
Okay.
So about 2 years ago, I took them off my list. And I had three conversations with them, meetings with their senior executives, senior management, about why I took them off the list and what I wanted them to do. And
right.
We had meetings. I kind of gave up on them. And then last year I got an email from them saying, you know, they appreciate all that I do. And, you know, they're not doing this anymore. And I've given up their support on any of these things, and I put them back on the list.
Okay,
but
well,
that happened with two companies last year, yes.
Well, that answers my question then. I missed that email, but that's great.
Yeah.
The second thing, are you familiar with an ETF, PowerShares, AG, it's a DBA?
I am. I have that on my list.
Okay. Well,
yeah, it's not on my buy list. It's not on my buy list, but I have it on my list. Yeah, it's my broad.
Okay. Then the only other question I have is, a guy brought up ETP, and I did a quick check on what their charts look like during the conversation, and they've jumped down pretty low. So it would seem to be a pretty decent investment at this point, but in my late 70s, I'm wondering if it'd be even worth it.
Boy, that's a tough call. So, I mean, I don't want to put you
on the spot on that one.
I don't want to tell you not to buy it, but if you have a long-term time horizon, meaning that this is money that you are going to, it's going to be in your estate, and you don't really care, you know. You're not going to see an immediate need for it. If you had an immediate need, it probably wouldn't be this.
Right.
Then I would be okay buying it.
Great.
Otherwise, I wouldn't.
All right. Thank you very much for your time. You do a great job. Have a tremendous testimony, and we'll continue to follow you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Okay.
I really do. Thank you, Tom.
Okay.
Let's see. Let me get to. one more. I'm going to take one more call if I can get to it. It's not clicking. What happened? Huh. All right. Well, well, I guess I don't know what happened. I guess we lost everybody. I doubt that this is recording because I guess I lost that too. Wow. Well, I apologize. I think I lost everybody there on that conference call. I'm so sorry. I don't know what happened. We were finished anyway. I was just saying I was taking one more call. I couldn't get to the call, and everything dropped. So I apologize for that. Well, I guess everybody is still there. Well, I don't know what happened. I have no idea. I'm sure we lost a lot of people dropped. But at least I used this time to finish this recording. I apologize. I don't know what happened. I was trying to get a caller on, and it didn't work. And next thing I knew, my screen was blank. But now that I shut down and went back on again, I see we still have a number of people on. So, again, I apologize for that. I'm very sorry, and hopefully, well, I was only taking one more call anyway, but I didn't get an opportunity to thank all of you, and I'm so grateful to all of you. I want you to know how much I appreciate your partnership. Your unwavering support to this ministry is really beyond description. I can't find words to describe it. If you knew all the detail, you would know why, but some of that reasoning is that it's an incredible work that God is doing in this ministry. And I wish all of you could see it, feel it, know it firsthand. So I would just say that it is a blessing. I just want to thank you. We have done some wonderful things. God continues to use this ministry, and it's because God has continued to humble me in such an incredible way by nudging so many people to give and to partner with this ministry. And I am in all of that every single day. I can't believe it. And I am grateful, of course, and give God all the glory first and foremost. But I thank you for hearing his nudge and feeling his nudge and his call and supporting the ministry. So thank you so much. I hope you have a great day. God bless.